Interested in practicing medicine in rural settings? Looking for cutting-edge medical education? Check out what's new at and how to get into SUNY Upstate in this interview with its Dean of Admissions. Welcome to the 322nd episode of Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? Get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Before we meet our guest today, I want to mention that you are invited to Accepted's upcoming webinar, How to Nail Your Medical School Interviews, to be presented by Accepted's senior med consultant, Sydney Foote, who started advising Accepted's med school clients way back in 2001. Learn how to prepare for your interview, what to do on interview day, how to most effectively respond to interview questions, and much, much more. The webinar is free, but you do need to register to reserve your seat. You can do so at accepted.com/322webinar. Again, register at accepted.com/322webinar. Our guest today is Jennifer Welch, Associate Dean of Admissions and Financial Aid and Chief Enrollment Officer at SUNY Upstate Medical. Jennifer arrived at SUNY as Director of Admissions for SUNY Upstate Medical in 1994 and became Associate Dean of Admissions in 2013. She's also no stranger to Admissions Straight Talk or Accepted. She participated in Accepted's old chats and was a guest on Admissions Straight Talk episodes 87 and 168. However, that was a while ago, as she and I were chatting about, and it's time to catch up with Jennifer and what's happening at SUNY Upstate. Jennifer, welcome back to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thanks so much for having me, Linda. It's a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. Now, SUNY Upstate has spent much time and energy over the last 5 years in a curriculum overhaul. While the basic goal of better integrating clinical and basic science with, rather, the basic goal of better integrating clinical and basic science instruction. How is the integration going? How is the overhaul going? And what's new?
Yeah, so there has been a lot that has happened over the last couple of years, and I think that we're really trying to meet students where they're at. They really don't learn anymore in a large lecture hall. So, you know, we do have some of that still, but the new curriculum is called the UP curriculum or Upstate curriculum. Yeah. And, you know, we're not very very good about making those names, but I think that it really has done a wonderful job in integrating more small group dynamic for students. All of our coursework is taped so that students can learn it on their own. They can go back to their rooms. They can play it normally. They can play it in speeds that really work for them. But I think that the big thing is that it's much more small group focused, and students get an opportunity to really collaborate with one another in order to learn the concepts. We're also doing some flipped classroom kinds of things, you know, essentially PBL. So we've got that the students are working on. We just recently had our LCME visit actually this spring, and they seemed very pleased with our curriculum. So we're really excited about the changes. They were slow in coming, but I think that the folks that worked on the curriculum did a fabulous job in really incorporating what the students were needing. And students also served on that committee, so they had a lot of input into it for those students that were up and coming. So we are at this point, I think that we're fully integrated during the first and second year, and I think working on the third year at this point.
Wow. So does that mean... does that mean that they spend half their day in classes and half their day in a clinical setting? Does that mean that the, you're talking about the integration, that let's say they will be studying the cardiac system and then working in the hospital in the cardiac section? Mm-hmm. How does the integration
so it's more practically mean? Yeah, so it's more the structure and the function of the brain and the structure and the function of the heart and the structure and function of the lungs that they're learning. They're typically in classes at this point for most mornings, and mm-hmm. then small group discussions about cases. So they'll view a particular case where, you know, it's relevant to what they learned in the classroom, and then pick it apart. and, you know, learn a little bit more about it in gross anatomy and things like that. So that I hope that that made a little bit more sense.
Yeah, definitely. I made it more concrete. And it's a lot of, we say case-based, obviously that's problem-based learning. That's the PBL. Are you using simulations at all?
Yes. Oh, yes. We actually have a brand new going live this fall on wow. Simulation Center. It's really fabulous.
Do you see at any time, like I was talking to one admissions director who said that they're not going to be using cadavers for gross anatomy?
We have an anatomage table. And, you know, for right now, we're still using cadavers. But that may be changing in the future. I don't know. But we certainly do have the anatomage tables. We've got all of the simulation that students will be able to do. So I am looking forward to what this fall is going to be bringing.
Yeah, it sounds fascinating. Really a lot of change. And what about the third and the fourth years, which typically have been entirely clinical?
So the third year is still very much the rotations that students go on. Fourth year, very much, you know, AIs and away electives and electives on campus. And then, you know, all of the fun begins for residency interviews and things like that. So those are still pretty much the same. There is discussion happening on our campus about doing a three-year curriculum. So I'm really excited about the possibility of that. You know, I think it would be like an 18-month first and second year of the basic sciences, and then students will take step one and then go right into the clinical years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, lots of change going on.
Yeah. The medical field, I think, in the last five, certainly the last 10 years, I think has changed more than it did in decades.
I agree with you completely.
At least from my perspective.
Absolutely.
And I actually interviewed former Dean Powell from University of Medicine, who's an advocate of the three-year curriculum, but more on a competency-based level. It was very interesting talking to her, and I'll link to that from the show notes for this show also.
Great.
Which people will be able to find at exhibit.com/322. Now, I noticed in terms of the application process that SUNY Upstate is requiring the CASPER. When do you recommend that applicants take it? And what do you learn from it?
Yeah, so last year was our first time using the CASPER. We did not use it in the admissions process because we really didn't know what we didn't know.
Right.
So we looked at how students performed on the CASPER and how students performed once they did our interviews. Mm-hmm. And there is a very strong correlation between our MMI interviews and the student's CASPER score.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. So we presented that just a couple of weeks ago. I had an admissions committee retreat with our admissions committee members, presented that there is a very strong correlation, showed it. We're actually doing some research right now to potentially have some kind of publication come from this. And we'll be using it a little bit more in the screening process. So, you know, students that aren't or may not perform, but I should say with a little bit of caution that it's not going to be a cut. It's not going to be one of those things. Oh, if they didn't get a strong CASPER score, we're going to not interview them at all. But it will be part of the evaluation when we get to the point where students really kind of look a lot alike. So, you know, kind of at the end of the cycle, when you're down to, you know, a few interview slots and academically students look very similar to one another, they might have the same types of grades. They might have gone to the same types of schools. They might have the same MCAT. And you're really looking for, you know, all of these things, you know, including the personal statement and their activities. And some of them do start to look a lot alike. This may be one of those areas that we can use to filter students either in or out.
On the margins.
Right. So students need to have it to be complete or we will not look at their application. So, you know, I'm really encouraging students to take them in the CASPER in, I think it's June, July, August timeframe. There is a 3-week turnaround time in getting that CASPER back, but we will not consider an application until we have the CASPER score.
Okay. So they basically, when they get the secondaries in, they should do the CASPER.
Right. Or even before, you know, once they're doing their AMCAS application, I was really encouraging students to go ahead and take the CASPER score as soon as they could.
Perhaps between finishing the primary and starting with the secondaries. Yeah,
right. That would be ideal.
Okay. Now, what can students, well, what about your secondaries? You're still requiring secondary essays?
Still requiring a secondary essay. There's you know, a few questions on there. One that we just added that's related to if students are interested in primary care. We do have some scholarship funding that's available for that specifically, but really looking for students that are dedicated to pursuing something in primary care. So that's really the only new question over the last couple of years. I don't think it has changed too much.
Right. And they have, I think, 1,800 characters total for the secondaries. How many secondaries do they have on your application? What I noted. Do you remember?
I do not.
Okay. No problem. What can students expect on interview day at SUNY Upstate?
Yeah, so over the last couple of years, the interview day has changed a little bit, and some of that has changed because of the change in curriculum. So there's not a lot of classes to go sit in on anymore, so it's more small group, and I know that the applicants have, in some cases, we've sent them into the small groups, but they always feel awkward. You know, here they are in their black suits and walking into, a smaller group of yeah. students. And so it's been a little bit, I think, uncomfortable for them. So we're still trying to encourage them to do that. But we start out with either a welcome from somebody on my staff, maybe the director of recruitment or the interview coordinator, and they'll welcome them and let them know what they can do throughout the day. And then in some cases, they'll go right down and they'll do the MMI, which is a 2-hour session. So it's a little tiring, but we hope that, you know, we give them a little something before they go down. We give them water throughout so that they don't get parched and anxious and nervous. And then we do 2 hours of an interview. And then we have been, this past year, we did a student experience where I've got the director of student retention, somebody that is a academic support specialist for years 1 and 2. I have financial aid and financial literacy coming in. I have student activities and multicultural affairs coming in and doing about a 25-minute presentation to the students to show them what's available outside of the academics. Because I think that that's something that they don't always know. They don't know that it's really important to find a balance. So getting involved extracurricularly is so, so important. Financial literacy, really important. We don't want students leaving medical school with, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. Retention, that we're going to do whatever we can to really help students to be successful. And then the academic support person that's there for them for the first 2 years is really there to help them every step of the way, whether it's tutoring or, you know, they've stumbled on some hard times, whatever it is, I want them to know that that's available. So we do that, and then that also gives them the opportunity to meet with other folks within student affairs that'll be there to help them along their journey to medical school. Then I come in, I do about a half an hour presentation with them about when you're going to hear what you're going to hear. And what all of that means. I talk to them about the 2 different campuses that we have. I talk to them about financial aid. I talk about all of the special programs that we have to offer. And I talk to them a little bit about fit, finding the right medical school that meets the needs that you have, and really going with your gut on what is important to you. So we do that. Then I have current students come in and do a question and answer session, which I leave for because I really want the applicants to ask all of the really hard questions. I don't script the tour guides. I want them to tell it like it is. The only thing I ask is if they just didn't perform well on an exam to maybe not come and be a tour guide on that day. And because they might not be liking Upstate quite so much.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah, we have a tour of campus, which is, you know, really just our buildings and the anatomy lab and things like that, the new academic building. And then students are pretty much free to go, but it's a full day. So if they come in at 8:30, they're there until probably 1 or 2.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And 2 hours is the MMI. Do you have any tips for preparing for the MMI?
So tips for preparing, I think, you know, we went with the MMI back in 2012, and we've been using it, and I don't think that we will ever go back to the traditional interviews. We really, from my perspective as chair of the admissions committee, we're finally getting what we want out of interviews. You know, we would get kind of superficial evaluations in some cases from our interviewers, you know, that said, you know, student went to X, Y, and Z college. They received a 3.8 on their GPA. They received...
But you already knew that.
Yeah, a 525 on their MCAT. They're going to be a great doctor. And, you know, you'd sometimes think, if it were that easy, why are we doing interviews?
Right.
You know, so really now it's forcing more of the non-cognitive stuff, more of the interpersonal things, the competencies, the resilience, you know, curiosity, communication skills, you know, written communication, empathy, all of those types of things. We're really able to, I think, assess that in a different way using the MMI. So I think that, you know, tips for students really would be to become comfortable with themselves, comfortable meeting new people, shaking hands, looking people in the eye when you talk to them. You don't have to be an expert on health policy or, you know, insurance or anything like that. We're not looking for that. I'm not looking for students to diagnose patients. But I am looking that they have had experiences working with patients, interacting with physicians, being a leader, maybe being a mentor, a teacher, something like that, serving diverse populations. So each of our questions is really geared towards something like that and part of the competencies from the AAMC.
Is there a way to prep for the MMI?
Yeah, so our MMI, I think, is different from other schools in the sense that we don't do a lot of scenario-based. A lot of our questions are really traditional questions.
Oh,
and
all right.
So I think that, you know, some of them are scenario-based, and those are the questions that are given more to admissions committee members or physicians. But again, we're not looking to have a student diagnose patients or prescribe medication, but essentially be able to articulate what a doc does during the day and how they interact with their patients. And, you know, ethical scenarios may come up in our MMI. So I think really being true to yourself, being comfortable with how you interact with others is really going to be very important. So I think really just practicing the interview itself, mm-hmm. I think that students that aren't successful in our MMI are not comfortable with themselves or are not comfortable with meeting new people mm-hmm. or are not comfortable talking about themselves. And I think that that is really somewhere that they struggle. And so putting themselves, and I tell students this all the time, I want you to practice interviews. And I want you to practice being comfortably uncomfortable because nobody's comfortable in this kind of a situation,
right?
They're not comfortable meeting all of these new people and being evaluated. But if you stop thinking about that and you just are yourself and you have practiced, you know, walking in, looking someone in the eye, saying it's nice to meet you, shaking their hand and sitting down and answering the question, that's what we're looking for.
Right.
That's what you're going to be doing as a physician.
Of course. Of course. So, Makes sense. So the MMI at SUNY is more like multiple, if you will, traditional interviews. It's not scenario-based, as you say. There's not going to be an actor.
There is a standardized patient.
Oh, all right. Okay.
One.
Okay.
One standardized patient. And then there's also some scenarios, but it's more, without giving too much away,
okay,
it's really more ethical based, you know, if in this situation, what would you do?
All right. And then when there are multiple people that they're talking to, that's the other part of it.
Yep. There are 9 different stations per applicant.
And does any of the stations give the applicant, let's say, more traditional interview questions, you know, walk me through your resume, or why did you do X, Y, and Z, or why do you want to be a doctor?
So again, without giving out too much.
Okay, okay.
They need to know that they're interviewing at Upstate. So okay. I'll say
that. All right.
They need to be able to talk about the reasons why. They need to be able to answer ethical questions. They need to be able to provide written communication.
Okay.
And they should know if there are any, let me just say, red flags or any concerns in their application, that there will be either an opportunity in the MMIs or an opportunity to meet with me to talk about those.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. It's interesting to me that you would have, let's say, concerns about an applicant, but still be willing to interview them.
There are some times where applicants might have an institutional action, having a beer in their room.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But if there are situations where there are multiple of those,
then it's more of a problem.
Then we start to have concerns about that. You know, and they may look great other than those indiscretions. And so there are times when, you know, it could be something as simple as, I was a freshman, I was away from home for the first time, I made a stupid mistake. But then there's other long-term issues where somebody might not get to the point of interview. But there could be questions that either the admissions committee has or I have after screening an application where I just want a little bit more information.
And I'm sure you understand that there can be youthful indiscretions and mistakes.
Absolutely.
Everybody's human. Everybody's human. And it doesn't mean that they can't be a good doctor.
No, I think that the only thing that I would ask, and this is probably a great place to say this, is that they own it.
Yeah.
Own it, take responsibility for it, and don't think that we're not going to see it and we're not going to question it. But, you know, it drives me a little bit crazy sometimes when a student on their AMCAS application or a secondary application will say something like, you know, I drank or it was my roommates and I was just in the room, and don't say anything more about it. I really want them to own it and say, I was there, my roommates were drinking, I wasn't, but what I learned about myself and about the experience is this.
Great.
That's what I want to know.
Great advice. That's great advice. Now, what about waitlisted applicants at SUNY Upstate? What should they do and what shouldn't they do?
Yeah, so update letters don't help for us. Our alternate list is ranked at the admissions committee meeting. We do not go back and re-rank. We do not go back and re-review.
Okay.
So once a student is placed on an alternate list, I have to, by LCME standards, go by the ranked list. So we could either not have a ranked list and then reevaluate students later on, or we have a ranked list and we don't reevaluate students later on. And so that's what our admissions committee has chosen to do.
Okay. So basically there really is nothing that an applicant can do if they're waitlisted.
Update letters don't matter. New letters of recommendation, they don't matter.
It's ranked and set. Okay.
Yep.
Now, this podcast is scheduled to air July 30th. It's a couple of weeks, a few weeks. And I am already starting to get questions, and I'll get more questions come August. Should I apply now? Okay. Or should I wait until the next cycle to apply?
Yeah. So starting an application with AMCAS in August is late. By the time they complete the application, they're going to be looking at, you know, 4 to 6 weeks turnaround from AMCAS, then the secondaries. And by then, you know, by the time I review applications that are complete sometime in September or October, I probably have 50 interview dates available. So, you know, students are going to start. We just started our download yesterday. We actually had a major issue where we had a technical issue and ended up loading the last 2019 application file instead of the first 2020 application file. But anyway, just got to move on. So the 2020 students just received their secondary application information last night. They will probably, many will start to become complete by the end of this week, beginning of next week, and then we start screening.
Right.
So we screen in order of application complete. So when I start screening applications, it's by date of completion. And I had 1,700 students load last night.
Whoa.
So, yep. So as they become complete, those are the ones that I will start with. So the student that's going to wait until August to apply is going to be behind all of those students.
Right. How many interviews do you give out?
Yeah. So typically about 800,
If you have only 50 left,
Yeah, right. So once we hit October, November timeframe, we have probably 50 interview slots left. Mm-hmm. And then I always get students on December 1st that will call and ask me for an extension. And I don't grant them. Students have 6 months to apply. And, you know, by the time I hit December, I've got 7-8 interview slots left. Or I have interview slots left from students that are withdrawing because they've received other acceptances or things like that. So once I hit that point, I don't have open interview slots.
So, got it.
You know, right now, next week, I've got 800.
But that's going to change rapidly.
Going to change very, very quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically I think the bottom line would be for you would be to advise them to wait till next year.
I would.
Yeah.
I would.
Okay.
And I'm happy. I'm always happy to talk to students about, you know, that, you know, if a student is incredibly stellar and has connections with Upstate, what I mean by connections is that they, not that they're a legacy or anything like that, but that they have some connection with Upstate. Maybe they've done research there or they've done clinical work or
they grew up there.
Yeah, they've been there before. Those are the types of things that we would be looking at if a student were to apply very late in the cycle.
Right. What I sometimes tell applicants when I get this question is I said, look, there's almost every medical school admissions officer that I've ever spoken with, and at this point I've interviewed quite a few, says that chances of acceptance go down later in the cycle.
Yep.
Nobody has a later in the cycle to reject everybody. You know, otherwise you just end the cycle earlier. Why even have it open, right?
Yep.
So it depends on you. If it's really important to you to have some chance of starting medical school in this year's case in 2020, and that's worth it to you to have a higher chance of rejection, and you really are ready to go, then go give it a chance. But if you want to maximize the chance that you apply one time or that the next time is the most successful time if you're a reapplicant, then wait till next year.
That's, right. I would absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, it's kind of a personal decision more than a right or wrong.
Right. And it's hard to advise students of that, you know, because, you know, some really think that they're going to, and they may.
Right.
They very well may. I mean, a medical school may be looking for whatever it is that they have for that particular year. So it becomes very difficult to, it becomes very difficult to advise students, and they really have to follow their own guts, intuition, whatever, you know, with regard to that.
Well, I think they also have to be realistic and know what they're doing. Now, so for example, you said SUNY might take somebody late in the cycle, assuming that they have the grades, they have the stats, they have the experience that you're looking for, especially if they also have a relationship with the area, perhaps an interest in rural medicine, an indication that they want to work in Upstate New York.
Right, right.
So that would be kind of an extenuating positive circumstance in their favor.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What makes an application exciting to you in a positive way?
One that's One that's a little different, and I don't mean like off the wall different, but, you know, one whose reasons for going into medicine might be a little off the beaten path. You know, we get a lot of applications that, you know, students are interested in going into medicine because they watched their grandmother pass away, or, you know, that was their, the catalyst, I think, that really brought them to medicine. And so I think that, you know, there's some honesty in that, but I think that, you know, somebody that might have traveled a different path and might have come back to medicine after some time away. And, you know, gap years are becoming more and more popular. And, you know, I think that sometimes, and I just heard this term the other day, growth years. Actually, it was somebody.
It's a more positive title.
Yeah, it really talked about it being a growth year. And I thought, that's a really great way to look at it.
Yeah.
Because a gap year kind of gives this idea that you've got to fix something. And I don't think that that's true, but I really love students that are taking that time off to really investigate whether or not medicine is the right career path for them, because it's awful long and it's awful expensive to be something that you didn't anticipate. And every year I have students that do a leave of absence or withdraw from school because it's not what they thought it was going to be. And then I get I struggle because I've got all these other applicants out there that this is really their calling. So I think taking the time to find themselves, do something that they might not normally get the opportunity to do, and then to write about it in their personal statement is really what I'm gonna love to read. So something that's fun, something that they never thought that they would get the chance to do, is what's going to set them apart from another applicant. You know, I've read personal statements where students have grown up in chicken coops, grown up on the streets, been homeless for years, became, you know, their parents' caregiver. So every student is different and their path is really different. So I think that when I get an application that isn't cookie cutter, that isn't, I've done this and I've done this and I've done this, but more, you know, maybe I didn't get the chance to do all of that because I was doing this. That's what really excites me, that they're, right, that they're really going into medicine for these reasons that are sometimes so beyond belief that you're just kind of really drawn to it.
Okay. Thank you. That was a great answer. When do you think that repeat applicants should start thinking about perhaps pursuing another avenue in healthcare?
So we certainly have had applicants that have, I actually saw one several years ago that applied to medical school 10 years in a row.
Oh gosh.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So I would say that, you know, what I would say to students is if they don't get in the first time, try it again.
Sure.
Don't try it with the same application. I can't tell you the number of applications that I've read that are exactly the same as the year prior. Same personal statement, same letters of recommendation. If it didn't work the first time, it's not going to work the second time. Right? So strengthen it. Reach out. Find either a medical school person or somebody like you that can really help them to strengthen their application and look at where it might not be meeting the interests of the medical schools. So if they can really have somebody assess it and say, you know, this is where you're falling short, and then they can address it, that's great. But once you get to 4 or 5 applications, I probably look at something else, you know, look at something that's health related, but not necessarily medical school. You know, sometimes students will say, well, what about PA? Well, PA, quite frankly, we have a PA program, and I think that it's as hard, if not harder, to get into than medical school.
Wow. Right.
So, you know, but I think 4 times is certainly the 10-year guy, it was tough. And, it, you know, it might be time to think about something else.
Right. Right. I'm sitting here because I sometimes have conversations with medical school applicants, and I'll say something like, you know, I applied last year and I got interviews, and the feedback I got was that I blew my interviews. So I'm basically going to use the same application, you know, same personal statement, same MMEs for this year's application. And I'll say, well, it didn't work. Why are you going to use it again? He says, well, I got the interviews, and the feedback was that my interviews were the problem, not the essays.
Right.
What would you say to that? I'll tell you what I said. He didn't, you know, again, there's one particular conversation I'm thinking he didn't like it at all. No, he didn't like what I had to say. But
I would say that even if they got the interview and they submitted the exact same application, that I would reject their application.
Okay.
And I would do that because what I'm looking for is growth from year to year. I'm looking for what
I told them. Go ahead. Please keep talking.
I'm looking for what you've done different and what you've done that has further motivated you to pursue medicine. So just because you got those interviews last year doesn't mean that all of that clinical work, all of that maybe research, all of those personal statements are going to do it again. Because I'm also going to have other applicants that could potentially look a little bit better than you, right?
Well, those other applicants will be showing growth in the last year and the reapplicant won't.
Right. Right. And so it's all about that growth. But you also can't say because it worked this year, it will work again next year, because the applicant pool is going to be very, very different. And there's nothing to say that because you got an interview last year means that you're going to do it again.
If you were to review an application like as I just described, would you feel also that the applicant isn't showing much commitment to the process? Maybe a certain laziness? Or no, that wouldn't be a factor for you.
Yeah, no, I would think that they kind of just assumed that what worked is going to work again. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they ever assume that.
Okay.
So I think that there would be a little bit of a question in my head about laziness.
Right. Okay. What advice do you have for applicants, not necessarily reapplicants, that are thinking ahead to 2021, in other words, not this cycle, next mm-hmm. cycle or the cycles after that? They're planning ahead. What advice would you have for that kind of applicant?
Yeah, so I would, you know, start thinking about putting your personal statement together. I think that's one of the most difficult things for students to do. And really, when I talk with students, I tell them, just start writing stuff down, stuff that you've done. And also do that with your resume. I mean, go through it and think about all of the things that you've had an opportunity to do, whether it's medically relevant or not. Because a lot of times students will maybe not put something on an application because they think that it's not medically relevant. And, you know, one of those examples that I always have with students is, you know, I was a waiter, I was a waitress, it's not medically relevant. But if you think about the transferable skills that you're gaining by doing something like that, it is something that I want to know about. I also want to know that you've had a job. You know, a lot of times we'll see students that are 23, 24 years old that have never had a paying job. And I think I want you to have some responsibility. If you're going to be taking care of me or my family, I want there to be some exposure to a level of responsibility that you've had in your life. So I think for those folks that are looking at 2021, you know, continue with clinical work. I don't want you to stop doing that, because that really shows me that you're dedicated to patient care, that you're dedicated to serving others. So, you know, clinical work, service work, if you love research, continue doing it. But really, a dedication to serving others is really, really important. But start putting all of that stuff together. Start pulling together your personal statements. Start pulling together a CV or resume. I know that there are some medical schools that do ask for that, Columbia, I think, being one of them. But you want to be as prepared as possible. Start thinking about some of the schools that you want to apply to. And just start getting your ducks in a row and things kind of ask for your letters of recommendation. But don't stop getting that clinical and service work. That's going to be really, really key.
And again, keep up the growth.
Yes.
Right. What would you have liked me to ask that I didn't ask you?
Maybe what keeps me at Upstate.
Okay. That's a great question.
So, you know, I've been there for a while.
A long time. Do we want to say how many years, or are we just going to pass over it?
Almost 25.
Whoa. Okay. It's almost as long as I've been accepted.
So 25 years. And I really think that, you know, what sets it apart, and I've had an offer from another medical school, and I've done some things, and I come back because of the people. I come back because of the environment. It's had its challenges. I will say that. But I really think every place does. But I really think that the people and the students and the experience that the students have once they're at Upstate, it's like no other. You know, and that's one of the things students tell me all the time, that they love our interview. They love our interview day because, you know, they feel so welcome and they feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves. And I don't want that to just be the interview day. I want that to be their experience. And I do think, you know, I left Upstate for about 10 months back in 2001. And I came back after 10 months. And I just couldn't find any place that really made me feel like I was in the right place. So I think that it's very much a family kind of environment. It is very much about students being successful and being supported. And so I think that, yeah, that's what I would have wanted you to ask me.
Well, I'm glad you raised the question. It's a great question, and I'm glad you answered it. And obviously you're very happy there, and that's wonderful.
I am.
All right, great. I want to thank you, Jennifer, so much for joining me today. It's as always delightful to speak with you, and I hope I don't take as long to invite you back. I really enjoyed learning again and anew about SUNY Upstate Medical and all the changes there and the innovations, and I appreciate your time and insight. Where can applicants learn more about SUNY Upstate Medical?
www.upstate.edu. We also have a Twitter and Facebook pages if you'd love to whatever you do have to do for those.
Okay. So we'll link to SUNY Upstate Medical as well as to probably the Twitter or Facebook pages, as well as related podcasts and resources. I mentioned the podcast with Dr. Powell in the show notes at exhibit.com/322. So just head over there, exhibit.com/322, and you'll be able to go quickly to SUNY Upstate or those other resources. Quick reminder that you are invited to Accepted's new webinar, How to Nail Your Medical School Interviews, Learn How to Prepare for It, Answer Questions Effectively, and Nail It. This is the traditional interview, but I think there will still be advice that's relevant for SUNY Upstate's interview. Register for this free event at exhibit.com/322webinar to reserve your seat. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 322nd episode. If you find the show worthwhile, subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever podcatcher you prefer. So don't miss anything and subscribe. You can find subscribe links at, you guessed it, accepted.com/322. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.